I'm Adriana Lozada, and you're listening to Birthful. And I'm here today on my own, just like I am every other week, taking about 10 minutes or so to talk to you one-on-one about a topic that I want to dive deeper into. So for this week, what I've done is I've compiled the list of 8 questions that you can ask your care provider to suss out some of the hospital and provider protocols that you may encounter towards the end of your pregnancy, and to understand if they are really practicing shared decision-making when it comes to your care. So choosing the right care provider is crucial. We know that that's crucial for having a wonderful birth experience. A systematic review of the research found 4 factors that make the greatest contribution to a person's satisfaction during birth. These 4 factors are having good support from care providers, having a high-quality relationship with care providers, being involved in decision-making about the care, and having better-than-expected experiences. Now, establishing high-quality relationships with care providers, that takes time, especially if your appointments and prenatals with your provider are very short. That's going to take time for you guys to build a relationship. Looking online, I found tons of questions about what you should be asking your care providers, but they focused more on what you should be doing, like what foods should I avoid, or asking your provider about if you could exercise or how much weight you should gain. But there were very little questions about what asking them what they're going to do for you and how they're going to do it. Being involved in decision-making about your care is something that you can assess on a constant basis and even in the interview process. And so to help you with that, here is a list of questions that are going to help you figure out if things are being done just because or because they actually make sense in your care and whether you have a say. If you don't have a care provider yet or you're wanting to switch care providers, what you should ask them for is for an initial consultation instead of an intake. And that way, the approach will be of answering your questions with ample time. So the first question would be to ask them how many births they did last month and how many of those were primary cesareans, how many vaginal deliveries, and how many inductions. And that's going to give you a nice picture of what they tend to do more. Right? So if you're looking for a vaginal delivery with non-induction, you're going to get a sense if that's something your provider is really going to support. Then my second question is, do you regularly work with doulas and who would you recommend? If they say, oh, we don't work with doulas, or you get a sense that that's not something they're open to, they are then telling you that they will limit your labor support. And as we know from the research, having good support is really important. So that is kind of a red flag, especially when caregivers don't spend a lot of time in the room and you are going to need other people around you to give you that support, not just your main care provider. We all want our kids to be clean, but it's not always easy. Enter Splash Pad. This line of cleverly designed, water-absorbent mats keeps your sink splash-free. They're washable, reusable, and waterproof, and allow for mess-free sink use when bathing newborns and for growing kids learning to brush their teeth and wash their hands. Created by a mom, the patented sink mats are high-quality, super-functional, simple to use, and not bulky. You can leave them on for a few days, and at the end of the week, throw them in the wash with the rest of your towels. You just snap it on to custom fit your sink once, and you're done. Splash Pad offers several adorable, kid-friendly prints and modern solid colors. They are great as a baby shower and holiday gift. Buy now and get 10% off on Amazon at amazon.com/splashpad. My third question is, as your due date approaches, what can you expect? Do they have policies around going past 40 or 41 weeks? And some examples of that would be automatically sweeping your membranes at, say, your 39-week appointment, or that towards the end of your prenatal care, you start getting cervical checks at every appointment, or that they tend to do inductions for due dates just because you're however many weeks along, not because there's a specific reason of why an induction is recommended. Another question you can ask is at what point they talk about the artificial induction of labor and what are some reasons for inductions? And that piggybacks really well on the previous question. Going past your due date is not a reason for an induction, and neither is necessarily the assumption that your baby is big. In fact, the research shows that the perception of a big baby is the higher indicator. It's a higher risk to more cesareans than babies actually being big. You know, when you weigh them after they're born, they're like, no, this baby wasn't so big, but we thought they were big. And so therefore there was an induction or a cesarean. Another question you can ask is if during labor you'll be able to move about freely and eat and drink. We know movement is really important in helping labor flow and helping baby move down the birth canal. So it's really important that you are able to move about freely. And then there's a lot of debate and research around eating and drinking during labor. It depends on what interventions might be in place, but if you are having a low-risk, non-interventive birth, you should be able to eat and drink. And if they are against that, then that requires a deeper conversation. You can also ask them, number six, what are some non-medical ways to encourage labor flow? And if the only way they encourage labor flow is by augmenting your labor with Pitocin, then that might be a red flag as well. There are many steps, many ways to encourage your labor to flow other than requiring an intervention that will probably then end up limiting your movement and adding more fluids to your body. And, you know, you go down a little rabbit hole of interventions. So yeah, ask them what are some non-medical ways that they can encourage your labor flow. For number seven, I suggest you ask them if they have a favorite position for the pushing stage and what other positions do people often push in. If their favorite position is with having people on the bed on their back, that's also kind of a red flag. And if they have no other favorite positions, you should ask them why. And my last question, number eight, is how soon do they usually clamp the cord after birth? And have they ever waited for the placenta to be delivered before clamping and cutting the cord? The reason why I threw that question in, even though it relates to things that happen after the baby is born, is because I find that shared decision making might really be fine and go slow throughout labor. But when it gets to the point where baby's already been born and baby's looking fine, a lot of things are done very quickly without asking questions and without your input. So this might help suss that out, because even if they might say they do delayed cord clamping, that might be 30 seconds when you were expecting 5 minutes. So it's a good question to ask. And then as a bonus question, ask them about any hospital policy or any practice policy that they might have around COVID, so you can get a heads up of how that's going to affect your care. And you can also ask them if they're doing any anti-racism work individually in their practice, or if any work is being done by the hospital or birth center where they work, because we know that racism is a key component of why we have such awful perinatal mortality and morbidity rates in this country. So that's an important question to ask, especially if you're a person of color. Now, regardless of what answer they give you, listen to the language that is being used. Is there shared decision-making happening, or are you just being told what to do? Are the answers vague? Are they gaslighting you? Are they using scare tactics, being patronizing, dismissive, or even getting angry? Do continue to check in with yourself, especially as your due date approaches, to make sure they are still practicing shared decision making. If you find yourself, say, telling a friend that your care provider won't let you this or that, see if you can substitute, "I choose not to," instead of "they won't let me." And does that feel truthful to you? If not, it's probably not shared decision making. And so explore that. If you find yourself being coerced into interventions, two great questions to ask are, is my baby in danger and am I in danger? And if the answer is not a definite yes, then you have time to explore your options. Remember to use your brain acronym to figure out the benefits, the risks, the alternatives, and to get more information, or use your intuition and ask what happens if you do nothing, or what happens next if you agree to what is being suggested. Is there a question you think I left out? Email it to info@birthful.com or comment on this week's post on Instagram @birthfulpodcast. Birthful was created by me, Adriana Lozada, and is a production of La Antigua Williams & Co. The show's senior producer is Paulina Velasco. Virginia Lora is the managing producer. Cedric Wilson is our lead producer. Kojin Tashiro mixed this episode. Thank you for listening to and sharing Birthful. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, and everywhere you listen. And come back next week for more ways to inform your intuition.